You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Thank you so much for tuning in. As we go into our Tech Tuesday conversation, we're looking at how everything in this day and age is done online, from sending money to friends instantly to setting your thermostat from a different city, all from an app. I mean, farming, talking about hydroponics, can actually be done from a different continent altogether. So why do some organizations still use paper ballots to conduct important votes? If you're an organization that still relies on paper or in-person voting, perhaps you have some pretty convincing reasons as to why. But where there are actually also numerous ways a digital voting platform can help or your organization in ways that traditional and outdated voting methods cannot. So we're going to be talking about that, especially the pros and the cons of taking your voting process online. Joining us in this discussion is Mr. Muyoa Mutemwa, who is now on the line. Good evening to you and welcome to the Business Sense.
Hi, how are you?
No, doing all right, Buten, yourself?
I'm okay.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and the listeners regarding this very important issue.
It's always a pleasure.
Trusting that we find you well, though, it's a Tuesday. I know that the weekend is in the rearview mirror, but I hope that the week has gotten off to a good start.
Well, it did. I had a bit of flu last week, so the weekend was a bit slow, but I managed to make it to church. Wrote an exam on Monday, passed.
Okay, that's a high. How's the flu, though? Is the flu also better?
Well, it's over now.
Wonderful news. Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that. Let's jump into our conversation. It is Tech Tuesdays after all, and we want to look at the digital understanding of this thing called voting. Maybe let's start off by definitions for our listeners, just to be on the same page with them. What exactly is online or digital voting? And perhaps go a bit deeper and talk to us about how it works.
Okay, maybe let's start just a step back. When we say online voting, are we talking about national elections, because we're in an election year this year?
Well, it's up to you how you want to talk to us about it. Is it just going to be talking about the at an organizational level, or is it going to be that broad that you want to take it to the national elections?
Well, I don't know. We can take it anywhere you want. But maybe at let's start maybe with the national elections.
Okay.
With national elections, we've got national elections coming up. So that means the IEC members are putting together the information that they need to help us South African citizens be in a position to vote for the party that we think can take the country forward.
Yes.
And generally, that's what we're looking for this year. Of course, the presidency will announce the date and then we'll do the voting. Now, what Certainly. Electronic voting is... in a nutshell, is of course when you look at voting, it's a paper-based process.
Okay.
So we're looking at printing of that paper, which is money, distributing, transporting that paper, making sure that that paper arrives in the morning, that it doesn't stay over at the voting station. There's a lot of logistics and processes that goes into just ensuring that the voting is. Can be seen as what you call legitimate, right?
Okay.
Now, when we talk about electronic voting, we are now talking about reducing a lot of that paper-based stuff. Like anything in government, when it comes to paper, it just takes a little bit longer, irrespective of which government you're talking about. It could be our government, it could be any other government in the world. So now when you digitalize that whole process, it makes it a little bit easier. And there's been countries where they've been doing this e-voting for years. For example, if we look at maybe the US, which is a Western country that us developing countries, it's always nice to look up to them. They've had e-voting for some time now, and they use it for their what you'd call state votes, which would be maybe an equivalent of provincial votes or local government votes. And then the national government votes, they would also use it for that. And there's two methods basically that you can use for this e-voting. The first one is still what you call paper-based, but this one allows you to count the votes much faster, because what you do is you take a piece of paper, you fill in whatever you select the parties or the people that you're voting for, because now we can vote for individuals. You take that paper, you feed it into the machine as a voter, and it will automatically capture what you
okay,
have.
Okay. So it's almost like a hybrid system.
It's a hybrid system.
Okay.
So it will automatically capture that.
Okay.
Now, at the end of the day, all you need to do is collect all of that information, put it in one place. The counting is almost instant. So again, let's look at the United States. They have a much bigger population. So they can do their voting very quickly when they have this type of machines. The last one is what you call a direct recording electronic voting system. This one is you go to a pane of glass, and on the pane of glass, instead of the paper, you select your choices there on the pane of glass. Now, on that pane of glass, there's no paper. It means that it will automatically capture your results as well.
The moment you put
and
it in. Okay.
It's almost instant. Yeah.
So you don't get an online way. You don't even need to go to a polling station. You can just do it from the comfort of your home. You just register and you go into a certain link and so forth. There isn't yet a system to that degree.
Well, there are European countries that have now taken it even a step further, where you can now even do that to some more or less degree, where you are given unique identification credentials when you register to vote. And then you use those to basically access the website. You do authentication. You verify that it's you. And then you then perform the voting. You can do that online.
Okay. And now talking about it from an organizational perspective, you're talking here from national elections and so forth, which is a bit more broader based. When you're talking organizations a bit more smaller scale, how can they, or how is e-voting incorporated in those platforms?
Okay, so again here, I just need to be careful to answer the correct question that
okay.
you're asking me. So when we say organization, are we talking about... I work for this particular organization in South Africa, and they have e-voting maybe around a particular decision that needs to be made, and they just need employee input. Are we talking about that?
Or
are we talking about an organization that is now at, let's say, board level with people working remotely, where sometimes board members are not able to be in the same room, therefore they have to, you know, make their votes electronic? Or what are we talking about
here? I think if you're able, give us the both, because it sounds like I hear the distinction you're putting there. I actually have a comment coming through from our WhatsApp line, and to our listeners, if you want to share in the conversation, do so on our WhatsApp line, +27734703520. Want to hear your comments, your inputs, your questions, even as we go through this very, very important topic. But Ilana, even church elections, so members are saying at church they don't want to be lifting hands anymore, because apparently when you vote or don't vote for a certain somebody, then they look at you funny. You didn't want my proposal. So they want e-voting even in churches. So perhaps take us through to say in the different facets that can be utilized in certain organizations, how does it look like?
Okay, sure. I think the church one is similar to a typical organization where maybe, let's say, for example, it's in an auditorium and everyone has to vote or something.
Okay.
But the simpler way of doing this is what organizations do is every person within the organization has an identity.
Okay.
That identity can be simplified to a username and a password, and maybe some sort of two-factor authentication. Two-factor just meaning that their phone would send them a text code that they need to just additionally authenticate that it is them, so that we can verify that username and password was not stolen by Janet from accounting, because we also sent you the code to your phone. So once you've inputted those, you now have access to a voting page or something. And what organizations usually do is you can only do that once.
Okay.
You can't change your vote, but you can only do it once, meaning that even if you've got the correct username and password, the text code that's sent to your phone, you can't do it again.
It's done. Once it's done, it's done.
Okay. So that also tends to work quite well. It's almost instant. In my own organization, when we have these NDA functions and we have to vote for, you know, top performers, we use the same system as well, and it works quite well. And you can find this across your big tech companies, the likes of Google, Microsoft. I'm probably forgetting one. And if someone's probably yelling, "Yay, there's my company there that you forgot." But
So true.
generally, they have these forms, like Google Forms or
Yes.
Microsoft Forms that you fill in, and then there's your voting. It's done. You can also do this for a church as well, where every baptized member can be sent a unique code to their email. And when we join, let's say, for example, a Zoom online meeting where there's a church business meeting, because we had a few of those during COVID,
Yes.
church members can basically then input their unique code on a website, and it will only allow them one vote, and then they vote in secret.
I think let's go to the crux of the matter. I think everybody is hearing the conversation, the technicalities thereof, and how you're presenting it. How reliable are these systems? I mean, we're talking a couple of years back when we moved I know the Gauteng, then the MEC for Education was talking about how they moved the learner enrollment, I think it was, from the physical to the online. And on day one, boom, it crashed and people just were, it was a mess. And it almost seemed to cause more confusion than the old system. How reliable is this online voting?
Okay, so when we talk about reliability, I'm just going to step back into my profession here just a
Okay.
bit. There's three main things. We call them CIA. CIA as in your US CIA. The first one is confidentiality. We want to make sure that people's votes are confidential.
True, true.
The second one is integrity. We want to make sure that once someone has cast a vote, no one can change it. And then the third one is availability, that systems that allow you to do the voting are available and accessible to the right people. So in that case that you just mentioned with the MEC, one of these was affected, which was availability, meaning they did not provision, and this is what we normally do for the availability. We
Okay.
provision enough resources to basically plan for a scenario like this. So we usually use what you call if then statement. So an if then statement would be similar to say, if it rains today, I'm going to carry an umbrella.
True.
If it's cloudy today, I'll carry an umbrella. If it's not cloudy, I won't carry an umbrella. So we use this in our day-to-day lives. So I think in that case, maybe what they did not plan for was to say that if the capacity of these systems that are going to provide this online registration hit about 75%, because we usually work with about 75%
Okay.
computer utilization, then we need to scale out. We need to provision more servers. So in simpler terms, if we're having two computers that were allowing people to register, as soon as those two computers' resources hit about 75%, then we need to get another computer there.
Okay.
Then, as soon as those ones hit 75%, we get
We need
another
to
one. So
then
we get
add the
four, then five, then six. So we tend to do that in a way that is called auto scaling to ensure that availability is there.
is never compromised.
So now, when we talk about reliability, we need to look at all of these three things: the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability. We've already spoken about availability. Confidentiality, we just need to make sure that people's votes are secure when they're voting. And integrity, we need to make sure that once someone has cast their ballot, they can go home being rest assured that no one's going to change their vote. Now, the question you asked was, how secure are these things? Well, it depends on what's running on them, right?
Actually, that's very true because I mean, earlier on, I was chatting to the previous presenter for the previous show, and that was his main worry to say, "Hey, corruption, man, especially in African countries, hey, will this thing be safe?"
That's always a question. But let's simplify it to what challenges we have right now. Let's say, for example, we have elections. Name one African country where an African leader has said, "No, I'm pretty much happy with the elections. That was okay."
Especially
It
if they
hasn't
are the
happened.
loser, right?
Especially if they were sitting and then they were oust.
Hey,
Oust.
even worse, yeah.
So they'll always say, we believe there was election tampering. You know, there's always spoiled ballots. People are always complaining about spoiled ballots that are thrown away and things like that. So the question that you have to always ask is, okay, what's running on these things? and how secure is the operating system that's running? Can we actually trust it? Has it actually been tested? Because I think more than trust, we need to test. We need to verify that whatever we are running is secure enough to ensure the confidentiality and the integrity.
Yeah.
Then we can say, okay, for sure, even if these things are transported in the back of a baki, let's say from Vereeniging to Gauteng, Vereeniging isn't Gauteng, but from Vereeniging to Pretoria, where they're being counted, we can be rest assured that those things, you can't change the ballots.
And right? No one's going to be able to access,
Yeah, so the important thing is what operating system runs there. And maybe just to touch on the operating system.
Okay.
You get people that say, no, my Android phone is more secure. And the other person say, no, my iPhone is more secure.
Hey, yeah.
Well, the reality is there isn't such a thing. All software has what you call weaknesses. And it just depends who has access to those weaknesses and who can exploit them.
And I guess that's where the challenge is, right? To say, hey, that software, that firewall, is it reliable? And who is running it, like you're saying? Because everything is risky. And I think that's the sad thing, that we tend to feel like for example, people look at flying as a very risky mode of transport, because one mistake, if that plane goes down, the survival rate is almost zero. So they look at it at that perspective. But actually, they say statistically, flying is the safest mode of transportation there is. So we look at everything and we think, no, because this one looks like if it goes wrong, it really goes wrong. Therefore, it's the worst. And you know, actually, everything is risky. Even that which we are accustomed to is also risky.
You are correct in saying everything is risky. Yeah. So you're about to ask a question?
Yeah, I wanted to just maybe before after you've come in with what you wanted to add, I just wanted to find out at the prevalence of e-voting, especially in Africa, how well are we doing in terms of digitization of the voting process, be it at organizational level, like you're mentioning in your own organization, or much more broader at a national state with looking at national voting and the likes? I don't know. Are we there yet?
Okay. So I think maybe before I get there, I just wanted to touch on something.
Mm-hmm.
E-voting changes government. It changes service delivery.
Okay.
Right? And I want you to think about those two. It changes government, which changes how service delivery is done.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also know that social media also changes the way service delivery is done?
Mm.
Because if enough people complain about something, trust me, someone in government will see that and say, I think we need to change the way this happens. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this is social media is something that can be easily manipulated.
Okay.
If you see tomorrow a trending story that a particular party did 1, 2, 3, we don't even check the validity of the story. We tend to say, look at what they're doing.
True. True. We run with it.
Right? Yeah. So there we have an example where an open system can change how we think about what's happening in society.
Mm-hmm.
So in as much as we have social media, we still have what you call things that we can trust.
Okay.
Right. Meaning, even if we would have an electronic voting system, there'll be elements of that will always say that it's possible that someone tampered with it.
Mm-hmm,
but
there
will always be the underlining fact that we can always trust software to do what it's meant to do.
Mm.
I hope I didn't lose someone there. All right, now back to your question.
I hear you. Maybe let me see if I got you. And you can. I know I might not be the sharpest tool in the shed. But so you're saying, fair and fine, there might be elements of, like you're saying, taking for example the example of social media, that everyone is an expert on social media, right? You might get some, elements of people who bring in false information, but you can, that almost serves to put people in check, if I'm getting you well. That becomes then, if access to information is so on the people's fingertips, then those who are not so maybe doing things the right way might be feeling under pressure to ensure they perform. Am I hearing you well? If you're saying that,
Yeah, so more or less, you always find information that is meant to cause people to think in a different way. That's inaccurate. But because we have been living with social media for a long time, we can quickly discern, say, I'm not sure this information is valid. And therefore, we can autocorrect.
And fact check and the lies. Right. Okay, okay.
Fact check. So you've got a lot of people who would then just jump. You know, a Peter kind of a person. Say, look at what they're doing. Then someone will say, have you
fact-checked? Wait a minute. Yeah, let's really look at this. Okay.
Right. So that system has a way to fix itself.
Okay, okay.
Of course, it's not 100% accurate. Of course, we've got a lot of fake news that happens on social media. But if you follow a story quickly enough, you can figure out whether it's true or not. Especially when they say someone died. That always amuses me.
So true.
Either the person comes and say, hey, I'm not dead, right? So I'm saying, like anything software that we can utilize for our day-to-day lives, there are elements where there are weaknesses that people can attempt to exploit. But we have to trust software makers to say that they have to find ways to autocorrect that to make sure that we can still rely on that.
Yeah,
we always have software on weaknesses. It's a given. It's software.
It's software. So true.
This is why
so
it's updated all the time. Yeah, so I think you'd ask a question in terms of how what's the penetration like in terms of e-voting in Africa. Let's look at from a national perspective where I started first. To my knowledge, there are countries that are considering voting. E-voting, that would be one of our neighbors, Mozambique,
okay,
Zimbabwe. I actually found this quite interesting as I was doing some notes on this. And the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Wow.
I was quite amused by that one. Burkina Faso. So those four countries, they're the ones that I found, at least are thinking of something along.
So they haven't started, e-voting. But they're looking, considering they doing it. Started. Okay, okay.
Considering doing it, they're probably making necessary investment into the research for that. From an organizational level, maybe bring it down back into South Africa. Well, it depends on the organization and what software they have. Remember, it always goes back to the software. And it also goes back to the use case. What exactly are they using the software for?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't really know what the usage looks like. But what I do know is this. If you look at what's the underlying infrastructure that supports e-voting is internet coverage.
Yes.
So you always have to look at the fact that, okay, fine. If we are then saying that every employee of an organization can perform e-voting for aspects of their organization, what does the internet coverage look like? What we do know for a fact is that those in urban areas do have access to things like 3G, 4G, and 5G.
Yes, yes.
Whereas in the rural areas, we're still talking about decommissioning 2G. Nice. So there are challenges there, but from what we've seen, if people have got internet to connect to online meetings, they should be in a position to participate in e-voting. And then the usage of that would then depend on what the organization's policies and structures look like.
You know, before we, because I wanted to maybe then answer, especially with the last point you raised, to answer the question of going forward, do we see a state where we will totally remove the paper ballot and go to e-voting? But maybe before we go to that, can you touch a bit on some of the benefits that are found when people go and take on e-voting, be it at organizational level or nationally, because surely, like you already started pointing out a bit earlier on, to say it changes government and it changes the systems around us and organizations. What are the benefits of e-voting and maybe even some of the risks? I know you already started touching on those risks as well right from the beginning, but maybe just lay it out to us at this point.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the benefits. I think if you look at the fact that paper-based anything takes time.
Yeah, and costs. Right?
So, yes, there's costs. One of the benefits is a reduction in cost.
Okay.
It also means that we can get results as quickly as possible. If we can get results as quickly as possible, it means that decision making can start. And that is helpful towards long-term planning, right? Whether it's a strategy session or we're giving input into something, it can help with that.
Yeah.
So the benefits are there. What we can also know as a benefit is that we can trust software. Let me say why we can trust software. Because all when right. you get on a plane and you are flying from South Africa, Johannesburg, or Tambo to, let's say, Heathrow in the UK,
mm-hmm.
you are on a plane that's operated by software. You're high up in the air, a couple of kilometers in the air, solely on software and some metals. Right?
No, man, so, we trust the pilot. We trust the pilot.
Well, the pilot is working with the software.
Without the software, he would be useless, right?
Yeah, and sometimes you find that actually what they do is they put that thing on autopilot.
Yeah, majority of the way, yeah.
Yeah, so there's firsthand where we're seeing software at play.
Yeah.
Software helps us to understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And the point I'm trying to say with this is in this digital world, we've come to a position where we now live mm-hmm. and trust software.
Yeah. Yeah.
So software is not going to leave. It's here to stay. We just need to find use cases where we can use it, still maintaining those three things: confidentiality, mm-hmm. integrity, and availability. So the benefits are there, meaning that software will make our lives easier because software allowed us to not sit in a carriage pulled by two horses from Johannesburg
all the way to Heathrow. Yeah.
It made travel faster. Right. So obviously, when now we're introducing electronic voting, things should speed up in terms of how we live our lives. It means that it should give us a little bit more time to spend at home with people that we actually care about, because voting on a day shouldn't take the whole day.
Okay.
Right. We can then spend the rest of the day with friends and relatives and family and things like that. So the benefits are there, and we can look at countless examples.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the risks. There's always risks with software. The same airplane that has software. Who's to say someone can take a little piece of malware, put it in that thing, and that thing flies in a different direction?
Yeah.
It is possible, right? But what we also need to look at here is, as I was doing my research, I found it quite interesting to say that the software that runs on these e-voting machines in the States, you could actually download it from Russian websites. And I was like, wait a minute, are you telling me that someone can download this stuff from a Russian website and then put it in this thing, and then someone actually trusted to say, when I place my vote in this machine, it's going to decide the future of this country?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are risks there.
Yeah, that's sobering.
Yeah, there are risks, but like with anything, those who work in the risk space have to then do the risk assessments.
Yeah.
Sit down and analyze the risk, look at the impact, look at a number of things, and then decide, well, this risk is worth taking, or this risk, we need to mitigate it this way, or... whatever needs to happen there. And I think it's an exercise that also comes with those in the cybersecurity space, because they specialize in assessing risk around software, where they can, for example, in the US, there's a conference called Black Hat, where e-voting machines were purchased off eBay. You see, that's another risk, where these machines were available to anyone in the public, and they sometimes connected to the internet, so someone has the time and the means and the resources to break this thing down and understand how it functions. So what these hackers in the US did was it's called the e-voting village. It's a section of the conference. So what they do is they buy these machines off eBay, and then they strip it down to its bare parts, to the engineering components, the soldering irons, the metals. And then they start from there to build and understand how this thing works. And then they begin to see at which levels in this software e-voting systems architecture can we introduce threats that could potentially compromise this thing.
Okay.
So type of people, once they've gone through that exercise, they can then say, well, we're pretty comfortable with this system that we have looked at it from beginning to end, and we can say that it is secure if it's used within these controls. So yeah, so the risk will always be there, but we need professionals to look at how to actually minimize
and mitigate those risks. Yeah. And as you were mentioning the benefits there, especially on the time factor, I don't know if this will be counted as a benefit, and perhaps you can advise, being an expert in the space. You mentioned the issue of time, to say how e-voting would minimize the time between when the vote is taken and when the results come out. Does that also then mean that perhaps it can also assist that, since there is a reduced time lapse between these two points, it also means there's a reduced risk for tampering with the vote, because the more time there is between the vote and the outcome, the more time somebody has to alter and fix and whatnot. Whereas if there is that reduced time because you voted now and you get your results maybe in the next day or something like that, there's reduced time. Does that count as a benefit, or you can still be tampering, especially if it's online, that means anyone can access from anywhere?
Well, that's a good question. Let's go back to the last US elections. I think there was a gentleman called Donald Trump, and then there was one called Biden. At some point, Donald Trump was winning and the votes were coming in. And then it doesn't give you enough time to, they don't count for a whole week.
Yes.
It don't count for 2 weeks.
Yes.
Doesn't give you enough time to actually tamper with the stuff because everything is electronic. And I think at some point, one gentleman even said, let's stop the count, which became a famous meme, to say, let's stop the count when someone is in a higher position and there's a voting that's taking place. So once we limit that, and maybe if we include some of these things, we introduce blockchain. And I think we had a previous conversation around blockchain, which was, blockchain actually gives us the integrity component of record keeping, because it's written in a block that can't be changed. Right.
Okay.
So now we could introduce different aspects and actually put it in such a way that vote tampering could be a thing of the past. Because once your vote is cast, it's done, it's calculated, counted very quickly. Doesn't actually give you the time, because for you to actually get into the spoiled ballots and start making your own stuff, it's because you're aware of the results and you have time and you start to say, I'm going to lose, I need to make a decision here. So I would say, to some extent, it does actually is a benefit.
And looking at the paper, the old traditional system that we've known for years, and which we are now with the new age trying to phase out, is there places where the paper ballot, I mean, like we're saying, we all have risks. So is there places that you would look at the paper ballot system, the voting system, and you think, actually, this in these areas would be a better system than the digital?
Well, maybe let me answer this question. I think I did not mention this. One of the ways the DRE system works, it's called the Direct Record Electronic System. I mentioned that you vote on the pane of glass, right?
Okay.
What it actually does is it gives you a printout of what your vote looked like. Sometimes we need that for record keeping.
Okay.
Because sometimes when people are doing these audits, they need sampling to see, did 5% of the people actually vote, or are we saying that people didn't vote? So record keeping could be good. So there would be cases where, even if for an organization, you need to just know, can we have a record that shows that members of the organization did actually vote? You're saying that the members wanted this outcome. Show us proof. Give us a sample size to actually analyze. So you do find cases where paper is still valid. Because we need to actually then look at what were the options that people had, what options did they select, as a sample size. We don't need to look at the whole landscape. We can look at a sample size to say, okay, we had 5 people that people could vote for, and people chose this one because what also happens with science is that we also need to study people's behavior. So, and why I'm bringing this in is, let's say, for example, on a ballot piece of paper, you have a party at the top, and they're always at the top. Let's suppose that people's natural human behavior was to select the first thing that comes up on the list.
Okay.
You would find that any political party and this is hypothetical, that is the first one on the ballot would win. So we also need to then assess and say, okay, fine, what happens if we switch it around? Were there ballot papers where this was the other way around? How did those fare? So we need to also then say, from the sample size, how did the people vote? How did the ballot papers look like? And can we ascertain for surety that the system was fair from a behavioral point of view? Those who are into psychology say, no, from a behavioral point of view, people were given fair options. Right.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And maybe, like I said earlier on, when all is said and done, and you consider all these factors, the benefits, the pros, the cons, and everything, you are in the space, you probably have looked at the outlook and where we're going in the future. Do you see us totally doing away with the paper ballot, especially considering the limitations is on an African front? I mean, you were talking about the data access and everything. Or we're better off maybe going to a hybrid where those with access can get the digital voting, but you will still have paper ballot being part of the system that cannot be phased out?
So we have to look at, I think as in anything, let's look at what the West is doing.
Okay.
To my knowledge, countries like, let me just pull up my list here.
Okay.
The second, countries like Germany are considering e-voting. France are even doing this for citizens that are abroad, because it makes it a little bit easier for them, because you've got citizens, let's say South African citizens that are working in maybe one African country.
Yeah.
How do they participate in our local elections? Or we've got an organization that has employees around the world. How do they participate in electronic voting? So, for example, the UK is also thinking about this. And the US has had this for the longest period. So a lot of the Western countries, your big economic powers, they are considering that. And I think it's something that South Africa is a country we also need to consider, whether at a national level or local level or even at an organization level.
Yeah,
we need to move with the times. We need to do our own research. We cannot expect the Western countries to then say, you should consider e-voting because of 1, 2, 3. We should say, okay, looking at our landscape, how does our terrain look like? You know, the rural, our rural versus their rural is not the same. What does it mean for Ugogo, who is in the Eastern Cape? How does she participate maybe in PRASA? No, not PRASA. What? SASA, sorry.
Oh, okay, okay. SASA.
Not PRASA.
Yeah.
SASA. How does an old gentleman who is in the Northern Cape, how does he participate in grants? And how does he have his say? Because if democracy is truly to be realized, it must be a government by the people, for the people. And the only way it can be by the people is that if we get people's input. But if you're going to put people's input on paper, paper and pen, who then sits down and actually analyzes all of that and then says, oh, this is what the people want, right? So these are things that we need to go with the times. We need to see, how do we make this applicable in our country? What does it mean for people in different areas of the country? And for me, that's where we then say, okay, maybe we need to test this out.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to have trials of this. Maybe we need to test its accuracy. Test out those three elements: confidentiality, integrity, availability. And then we say, okay, this works. I would honestly like to believe that the example that you gave me at the beginning of the Gauteng government that decided to put
learner registration enrollment,
learner registration online, they actually did a pilot of that, and they thought this works, and they did the first time, and they saw there were challenges, and since they then, how many times have you heard that they had challenges?
Very minimal.
Yeah, so with that, we're always in a position where we can improve, because it's software. It will have weaknesses, or even the way we use it, because sometimes software does not necessarily have weaknesses, but it's just the way we use it.
So true.
Again, human behavior, right? So then we just have to, I would say, we need to be in a position where we need to welcome the thought.
Okay.
Right now we're at the thought stage. We need to welcome the thought, digest it, think about it, begin to say, okay, maybe we need someone to do something about this.
Yeah. Certainly. Well, thank you so much for chatting to us. We really appreciate your time as always. Any closing remarks that you'd want to leave with the listeners, especially on this very important subject, benefits and risks of digital voting?
Well, it's not like the users can do anything about it. but I would advocate. Say that, they can advocate for it. I mean, if you're in an organization and you believe that paper-based ballots or paper-based suggestions are not as quickly dealt with as possible, then I think say something.
Certainly.
Suggest something within an organization. Do your own research. Look at what are the benefits and then suggest it to your organization. I know organizations that are progressive will accept those suggestions.
Yeah.
Those in government who are listening, of course, we always have people in government somewhere. They can also start to think about it and maybe start thinking at which areas of government together, maybe with the private sector, need to work together to make sure that South Africa continues moving forward. So these are things that they need to think about. Of course, there will always be challenges. We'd rather say we tested something, it didn't work for us.
So true.
This, than to close our ears and say, software is a problem, let's not do this.
Certainly. And I think that's always the best approach, right? And be willing to be progressive. I think that's a very, very key thing. No, Mr. Mutemwa, thank you so much for chatting to us. Really appreciate your time this evening. And the wealth of wisdom that you always share with us and the listeners is always a gem, invaluable, I tell you.
All right, it's a pleasure.
Thank you
to all the listeners.
Thank you so much. Have yourself a great evening. And until we chat again, keep well.
Thank you.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.